Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is Peter Jennings, Marketing Executive here at Sintins. Today I'm joined by my colleague, Edward Patterson, Trainee Solicitor in the Employment Team here at Sintins. Today's podcast is episode 90 of our most recent Employment Bulletin update. So without any further delay, I'll hand you over to Ed. Ed, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, Peter. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to this podcast. So for this month's employment update, we've got recent cases and a government announcement to cover. So first off, we've got the case of Ponticelli UK Limited versus Gallagher. This was a case concerning whether an employee's right to take part in a share incentive plan transferred under CHUPI. So we've got Mr. Gallagher, he's the claimant, and he was employed by a company called Total Exploration. When he worked there, he took part in a share incentive plan, and this wasn't mentioned in his employment contract. So the claimant ended up transferring under CHUPI to the respondent in this case, being Ponticelli. And when he got there, his right to take part in Total Share Plan ended and he wasn't offered one in return. Instead, he was offered a lump sum of around £1,800. So the claimant wasn't happy. He argued that he had a right to participate in an equivalent scheme and brought a tribunal claim. So the Employment Tribunal and Employment Appeal Tribunal ended up upholding the claim. And this was essentially because since the claimant's rights to take part in the plan formed a substantial part of his financial package, they arose in connection with his contract for the purposes of CHUPI. So with this in mind, the claimant's rights to take part in the plan had therefore transferred under CHUPI and he was entitled to take part in a plan of comparable value to the plan that he had at Total. So the respondent ended up appealing to the court session and they relied on a case called Chapman versus CPS Computer Group. Essentially, in this case, the Court of Appeal had held that employees who had been transferred out of company had been made redundant for the purposes of a share option plan they were members of. And because of this, they could exercise their options. And the respondent essentially used this case as authority that where a share option plan is separate from the contract of employment, the rights of the plan don't transfer under CHUPI. However, this argument failed, and this was because Chapman only considered whether the employees had ceased to be employees by reason of redundancy and didn't actually address whether the rights under the share plan were connected with their contract of employment and capable of transferring under CHUPI. So for those reasons, the appeal was dismissed. So I think the main point here is that the decision is essentially making it clear that a share scheme, even if it's not mentioned in the contract of employment, can arise in connection with that same employment contract. And this decision is going to be really important for transferees in a CHUPI transfer, especially if they don't operate a similar share scheme already. So it's important to note that it's not just share schemes either. This could apply to other benefits such as bonuses or commission. And this will apply if they're considered to be in connection with employment. So if you're a transferee, you could be made to essentially implement benefits you don't already operate once the transfer is done. So as you can see, this would bring some practical difficulties. I would say going forwards, if you're involved in a CHUPI transaction, you're going to want to check if the transferor operates a share scheme or any other benefits, as I've mentioned before. So you've got your commission or your bonuses. If they do operate any of them, then you'll need to see exactly how they work and set out exactly what you're going to be responsible for post transfer. So next up, we've got an announcement from the government. So they've announced a threefold increase in the civil penalties that will apply if you employ anyone who doesn't have the right to work or live in the UK. These changes are expected to come into force at the beginning of 2024, and we'll see the penalties go up from £15,000 per illegal employee up to £45,000. And then for repeat breaches, you're going to see fines go up from £20,000 to £60,000. So the main thing to take away with all this is, as an employer, it's now even more important to carry out those right to work checks on all your employees before employment and whilst they're with you. And there are a few ways that you can comply with the law. This will essentially include carrying out right to work checks on individuals before you employ them and any follow up checks. And you'll also want to keep a record of all the checks that you carry out. If you need further guidance, the gov.uk website does have some really good materials on right to work checks, so I'd make sure to check that out. Finally, we've got a case from the Employment Appeal Tribunal. So they held that an employer's online application form put a candidate with dyspraxia at a substantial disadvantage, and therefore they were under the duty to make reasonable adjustments. So you've got the claimant, Mr. Malone, and he first started working with the respondent, Acom Limited, in 2017 in its Birmingham office. And he ended up being dismissed in the same year for poor performance. So flash forward to August 2018, and the claimant wants to apply for a role for the respondent again. But this time it's for their fiscal incentive team in London. But here's the thing. To apply for the job, he was required to complete that online application form, and he couldn't create the form's username and password because of his disability. So the claimant tried to rectify this. He emailed the respondent. He asked if he could make an oral application because of his disability. And the respondent was pretty much insistent that the claimant completed the form online. But they said, if you have any difficulties, just let us know. The claimant didn't let on of the particular difficulties that he was facing. And he just repeated his request to make an oral application. So after a period of not getting anywhere, the claimant brought a claim for failure to make a reasonable adjustment. That reasonable adjustment being his oral job application. So in 2019, the Employment Tribunal ended up striking out his claim as they believed the claim had no reasonable chances of success. However, once the claimant went to the Employment Appeal Tribunal, his claim was upheld and the case was remitted to the Employment Tribunal. So once it was remitted, the Employment Tribunal upheld the claim and they said that the respondent had sufficient knowledge of the claimant's disadvantage. They also said that although the respondent didn't know of the claimant's particular difficulties, essentially it was unreasonable for them to expect the claimant to explain them over email, given that he had difficulty with written conversation because of his dyspraxia. And then instead, the respondent should have called him to ask for the details. So instead of wanting him to explain over email, they should have called him instead. The respondent appealed and said that the claimant wasn't a genuine applicant, as he had already been dismissed from a similar role in Birmingham, as I mentioned just before, and that they hadn't come under a duty to make reasonable adjustments because the claimant hadn't told them what his specific difficulties were. The Employment Appeal Tribunal upheld the Employment Tribunal's findings and said that the claimant was actually a genuine applicant, as he was applying to work in a different team from that he had worked in Birmingham. The case ended up being remitted to the Employment Tribunal again, but this was just for them to reconsider whether the claimant was a genuine applicant. So I'd say the most important thing with this case is that as an employer, you want to be really careful about how you recruit employees, especially around whether your candidates require any reasonable adjustments. You're expected to make reasonable efforts to confirm if any candidates have a disability, and this will depend on each candidate. So in this case, you know, if you've got a candidate who has difficulties with written communication, like email, then you'll be expected to call them if they need any adjustments, because they won't be expected to confirm them over email, just like Mr. Mallon was here. So that's it from me. Back over to you, Peter.
Thanks, Ed. Really enjoyed that one. We continue to release useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts and blogs, all of which can be found on our website at www.sintons.co.uk. You can also follow the team on Twitter at SintonsHR. In terms of contact details, if you'd like to discuss anything raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with Ed or a member of the employment team. Ed can be contacted on 0191 226 7878 and via email edward.patterson@sintons.co.uk. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you all next month.